What is up, everyone? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Justin.
I'm Alex. Wait, no, I'm Pete.
That's what we call an early act twist, because what we're actually doing here is we're reviewing a bunch of comics that came out on this very day, this Wednesday. We are here to work through our stack, which is maybe your stack, and your stack, which is our stack, our collective stack. Let's get into it. We have a lot of books to talk about because we read the correct amount of comic books, which is too many. Let's kick it off with a little Ultimate Black Panther.
Just to defend 24. Myself, yes. The reason I say sometimes reading too much comics can be tough is like you don't get to spend as much time as you would like sometimes, you know?
No, and sometimes every comic book I lay down, I read it again, and I close my eyes and have a dream about it, each one.
I do like to sit in the afterglow of a comic that I've loved. You know what I mean?
You famously, you smoke a cigarette after every comic book, after you read every comic book.
I do. After a great comic, there's something like, there's this glow, there's just, oh man, you're a part of something that's great, you know? Like, you were smart enough to be like, I knew this is going to be good, this is great, and, you know, I called it, you know? You feel like you're a part of it, so...
Oh, that's really... What an interesting insight, where if you're like... You pick up a comic, you're like, this is a winner, and then you're like, nailed it, at the end of it. Wow, what a nice little series of treats the stack is for you most of the time. Well, let's kick it off, as I said, with Ultimate Black Panther number 24 from Marvel Comics, written by Brian Hill, art by Stefano Caselli, bringing the series to a close as the Ultimate Universe is simultaneously winding up to a big confrontation with the Maker and winding down. This comic, however, is doing its own thing. It's telling its own story. It is only, I would argue, tangentially connected to the larger super story going on in the rest of the Ultimates book. Pete, how did you feel about this final issue?
Well, this is cool. You know, we got T'Challa giving some speeches, you know. A lot of, like, kind of cool stuff. And then him and Okoye kind of maybe getting back together, at least trying to have a kid, which was nice. You know, she even was like, yo, you stepped out on me in Storm. But, like, oh, we should say at the top, spoilers for all the comics.
Yeah, we will spoil some of the things that happen in these comics. Yeah. We're not going to read them aloud or anything, but you will hear some of the reveals.
But I like this. You know, when you think of the Ultimates, you want big swings, you want interesting things, and they did such a cool job with, like, getting you know, Galactic with Black Panther and doing stuff in space as well as Wakanda. So yeah, I was impressed with this. I thought this was great. I love the art style. Also, you know, I'm a sucker for a ship, so yeah, I like this pairing.
He loves all ships. You should see him down at the harbor being weird with the boats. This comic closed out so strong, I thought. First series, I mean, our sort of medium, it's not even really a complaint. It's just this comic just feels like it's its complete own thing. It doesn't have to be part of the Ultimate Universe. This is just a good story. And I want to highlight especially the very conclusive nature of the back half of this book. The writing is just excellent. It feels so, like, specific and simple. We've got a speech from Black Panther. We are reparation. We are justice. We may not be permanent, but Wakanda is forever. Yeah. Wakanda forever. And then we just cycle through some characters. We hear Storm, Queen, Wakanda Forever, Strong Words, Required Action, I Have Time, I Have Time. Like, it's just, it's epic. It's, like, poetic the way it comes to an end. And I thought that was just a really nice way to bring this book to a close. Felt very deliberate.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. Agreed on all fronts.
Fantastic. Let's move on and talk about a little comic called Green Lantern Galactic Slam number 1, part of DCKO. DC Comics, written by Jeremy Adams, art by Kane Tormey and Pat Booten. Now, Pete, this feels like, yes, it is part of DCKO, much more on the tangential side of that as well. It's Kyle Rayner going off on an adventure, something that Kyle Rayner does. Famously, one of my favorite comics is when Kyle Rayner, when he was main Green Lantern, goes into a painting. It's an epic story from an annual, like, 15 years ago. But this comic is similar in vibe. Like, Kyle Rayner goes off into, I want to say, wrestling world, essentially.
Yeah, this really turns into a wrestling comic.
You know, it's a love letter. This feels like a love letter from Jeremy Adams to just wrestling across the board.
Plus, like, dude, you get Omega Batman here, and dude, you want to talk about a sick mullet? You know what I mean? And a sick mustache. You don't see great mullets like this. You know what I mean? This is just epic mullet status here. So
you don't see great mullets, Pete? You should come up to my hometown sometime.
Oh yeah, it's Brooklyn. Like, a lot of sick mullets in Brooklyn.
No. Where I'm from, I may be
talking about the Q's?
City boy, north of the Q's, from the secret country above at the top of New York State. It's a mullet parade in a lot of ways, and you'd really love it. I think it's like we looked at Rochester and we're like, look at those city folk. That gives you an indicator. Look at those garbage plate eating city folk.
Oh man, don't get me hungry, bro.
Yeah, don't get me starving. Really great art in this. I thought it really matched the vibe of this being like a wrestle slam situation. We get to meet this Omega Bam Man. We get to really hang with him.
OBM, bro.
In a nice way, you learn his origin. It feels like Jeremy Adams is committed to this character. He will be returning to the pages of Green Lantern, which is fun. He has a like 80s, 90s wrestler vibe to him. He also looks a little bit like a character from the cartoon Big City Greens, if anyone watches that. Oh, fun show on the Diz. The Dirty Diz, as me and my kids call it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I enjoyed this. This is just I would just caution you, this isn't going to have a lot of big connect points back to DC KO as an event.
Yeah, that's a little misleading on the cover for sure.
Yeah, but it feels like a KO book in that it's just a big fight, but it is definitely not feeding into the main event of that storyline.
Yeah, it takes a real wrestle kind of sidebar.
Yeah, an armbar, a sidebar,
if you will,
and we always will, because Pete and I were briefly a part of the WWE, right, Pete? Remember
that's
our
right,
time?
That's right.
The comic book boys. We really were defeated quickly in WrestleSlammania. Let's welcome out our next comic book. Please welcome to the show.
Inglourious X-Force.
Inglourious X-Force number one. This from Marvel Comics, written by Jordan Bloom and Tim Seeley, with art by Michael
Seals.
Michael St. Maria. This is fun. This is a big Tim Seeley stack. We got a couple books from our guy.
Yeah.
But man, this I really love this. This has like 90s comic book fandom all over it. Tim Seeley did a book called Local Man that I loved. Yeah, feel a little bit of shades of that type of storytelling here. The X-Force, sort of the ultimate maybe origin of Local Man's team in that book. But I love the trip back to the 90s characters. I felt legitimate nostalgia from seeing the photo that Cable is holding on to in this. And the team's really interesting. We got Angel / Archangel. You got Boom Boom. And you got Helverine.
Yeah.
Pete, you like so many guns and stabs. Yeah. What did you think about this?
This was awesome. This was really, you know, T Seals is having some fun here, and it really jumps off the page. I thought this was a really cool, interesting team. Great action. It feels like a cool X-Force book. I think they did such a great job of like getting you excited. Crazy last panel. As far as the first issue, I think this is a success, where they get you kind of hyped for this world and this team and then for what's to come.
And Cable's mission is really interesting. He is meant to stop an assassination, and to do that, he's putting together a team, and one of which is the assassin. So he doesn't know who, but it's a great, great premise, great little bit of intrigue to carry through this book that is definitely going to be a bit of a shoot him up. I honestly don't think so.
You think it's Bam Bam?
Boom Boom?
Yeah.
I think, no, I don't know. I don't want to say who I think it is yet, but I think it's Cable. All your favorites are back. It's nice to see these characters and feel like it is cool again. Let's move on to our next book, which is another fave. We've got Gargoyles and Darkwing Duck number one from Dynamite, written by Greg Weisman and Tad Stones.
Shout out to Brooklyn.
Shout outs to Brooklyn. You're talking about the Burrow or the Gargoyle?
Gargoyle. Okay. And also the super fan. You know what I mean?
Art by Ciro Cangelosi.
Great. Yeah, you want to talk about nostalgia baths? Yes, please. It's like they brought the cartoon straight to life, put it into a comic book. I felt like I was watching a fun crossover episode. This was just such a cool thing. And then Darkwing Duck has that great line of like, give me back my Morgana. You know, he goes and fights for his villain there.
He wants his villain back. Well, this is great. Brings you, like, I like the focus of this. We talked to Greg Weissman last year on the podcast about how he has, like, books. He has, like, a 1,000-page document of, like, the full Gargoyles timeline. And every book is a part of that. Even a crossover book like this that often, you know, might not be. This is a part of the larger tapestry of these characters, which is really interesting. That's why I appreciate the focus on Damona and Morgana at the beginning of this. We start, the crossover starts with the villains first. Very interesting choice. Love that.
Villains first.
Villains first. This book also... You know, Darkwing Duck in itself was, when I was a kid, was always such a weird crossover because Launchpad was there.
Yeah.
It felt strange. It was like a true spin-off energy. but this really had me saying to myself, let's get dangerous.
Come on.
Great tagline for a children's show. Let's get dangerous.
Yeah, come on.
Said the TV to me when I was 9.
Gargoyles is one of my favorite shows. Darkwing Duck was also one of my favorites. So this is in my nostalgia bath sweet spot. And the art does just such a great job of capturing the feel of the show. So I felt in good hands.
Yeah, and, you know, I love the Gargoyles comics. I watch the Gargoyles cartoons every now and again. I haven't revisited Darkwing Duck, so it was great to see Launchpad, Gosling, all these characters back together, still out there living their lives. And
plus the romance, you know, the little kind of will-they-won't-they of the cop and Goliath. I mean, come on, dude.
Yeah, you're talking, of course, about Elisa Mazza.
Oh, yeah.
And will they get together? Yes, I think the answer is yes. But very good. Check this out. It's not a one-shot as well. This story continues on after this. But let's jump into Rogue number one from Marvel Comics, written by Erica Schultz, art by Luigi Zagaria, part of the Shadows of Tomorrow as we're, you know, moving out of Age of Revelation into a whole nother era. Characters going in their own directions, I would argue.
Out of the shadows, I would say.
Well, the shadows are there. Here we have Rogue having a vision. She is getting into her past.
Or a nightmare.
Yes, true. Pete, what did you think of this? You're often skeptical of the X-Men universe, but I have a feeling maybe this one was making you smile a little bit.
Yeah, I love this issue. I thought they did such a great job with the story and the art to kind of get you excited for what's to come. And it's this maybe teaming up with Mystique and Destiny that's kind of given away on the cover. But I love the setup of this, and I think they did such a great job. I can't wait for the next issue. I thought this was awesome. It was kind of cool because they did like small moments of Rogue just kind of be staring off, you know, where it's like, ooh, we're going to kind of get into this later. But yeah, so I'm excited about exploring some of Rogue's past and getting to know Rogue more. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Erica Schultz as a writer, I feel like, is just really great. Really solid. Gets into the details. Yeah, I've really been loving watching her get more and more opportunities with different books, especially this one. There's a horror element to this book that I think is really well done. The way the nightmare that Rogue's having is shown to us from different angles, and we don't quite know what's real yet. But that's really, really draws me into this. I love it. This is rooted in Uncanny X-Men continuity. The Gambit Rogue romance right now is just firing. Like, I think if you're at all have been a fan of these characters, they seem like they're in the most stable relationship in all of entertainment. So shouts to that. I love there's a vertical splash page in this, which, again, throwback to a great comic, that she finds Mystique in this, and just a really stark image of Mystique that I thought was really cool. We've learned so much about Mystique from her series and the Mystique Destiny romance and how they got together. We got that last year, which was really cool. All of that playing into this comic, which has a great mystery at its core. Really enjoyed this. Def a pickup.
Yeah.
Please do. Let's move on and talk about Exquisite Corpses number 9. Yeah. This is from Image Comics, written by Tyler Boss with James Tynion IV, art by Valentin Delandro with Michael Walsh. This town is being murdered by a bunch of killers. There's sort of two tracks to this story. There's a conspiracy of very rich people who have sent their assassins into this town. They score points by killing regular people in the town. And then we're following the townspeople and the killers, actually, as they fight their way. This comic is upsetting, brutal, violent, but very compelling, I think. Pete, what do you think?
Yeah, this is really fucked up, but it's also really amazing. The art's unbelievable. The use of color in this comic is really impressive. This is like scary, sexy, cool. This is just dark but interesting takes on things. Yes, it's very fucked up, but it's also very good. So this really plays with my emotions, and I kind of do a weird dance with this book. But
you do a weird dance.
Yeah, I'm into it. You know what I mean? I'm into it.
This is the right kind of violence for you, you're saying?
No, it's walking a line with me where it's like sometimes I'm like, yo, this is, you know, I don't like points. You know what I mean? I don't like, you shouldn't get points if you murder somebody.
That's true. That's what society has said as well.
Yeah.
It's just this book that's putting that out there. I also really enjoy this. I feel like when we first started reading this, when it first came out, it was such a big story. There was so much going on. And I think the book has done a great job of narrowing in on a couple characters and the situations they're in. Curious how the corner's going to be turned where art, because I really want the town to just kill now. I want the regular people to become the murderers that they hate, you know?
Yeah, get some vengeance, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's healthy, right?
I feel like I'm the wrong person to ask.
Great answer. Let's talk about Psylocke Ninja number 1. This from Marvel Comics, written by Tim Seeley, art by Nico Leone. Tim Seeley, back at it. And again, a little throwback stuff. Here we're getting into the sort of complicated story of Psylocke and Betsy Braddock, two characters that have a, I guess, complicated, like, Psylocke is meant to be the same person as Betsy Braddock. We're finding out that there was a body switching soul swap thing, and classic. We're actually seeing that played out here after Betsy Braddock went into the Siege Perilous. This comic set after the events of X-Men 250, I want to say. So really interesting stuff. Pete, how do you like this? Another what? X-Men comic that you liked, question mark?
Yeah. I mean, it's in great hands. It's got a great team behind it. Yeah, I'm a fan of Psylocke when done well, and I feel like this is a great kind of setup. They're really teeing up this kind of ninja fight where we got Elektra versus Psylocke here. So I think that's such a great idea. I can't wait to kind of find out how this is all going to go down. This is enjoyable. You know, you get to get inside Psylocke's mind a little bit, which is fun. JT says loves a little mind humping, so it's always nice to get inside somebody's head a little bit and see how they think and feel about stuff. So, yeah, I think as far as the first issue goes, this is a winner.
Yes, this picks up from Uncanny X-Men number 251 when Betsy went through the Siege Perilous and, you know, tells this story. It's a complicated thing, and I think Tim Seeley does a great job of just owning that and getting into it. He's a great writer, that guy. The art feels simultaneously like a throwback to that Chris Claremont era style of art, which really works here, especially when we get to the Quanon side of the story. And love, just the perspective just jumps out to the there's this great wide shot panel of Psylocke climbing this mountain, which I thought was really dope.
Yeah.
And agree, setting up a character like Elektra as the I don't want to say nemesis. I'm sure she's going to fight, but it feels like it's potential friends. Yeah, so really enjoyed this as well. Great stuff from our guy Tim Seeley. Let's move on and talk about
T-Seals
of Comedy Gold of Superman Unlimited, number 9 from DC Comics, written by Dan Slott, art by Mike Norton. Dan Slott out here writing Superman comics that are not a part of DCKO. He's doing his own thing where Superman has some slightly different powers. He turns to gold. We are having a little bit more fun. These feel like Dan Slott's time on Spider-Man. They just feel like Dan Slott comics.
Yeah.
Where it's having fun. It's being a little weird.
In a good way.
In a good way, yes.
Sometimes things can feel too much like somebody and pull you out of the story, but it's kind of cool. I feel like the art also brings a lightness, a funness, which is kind of Dan Slott's sweet spot sometimes, not all the time.
Dan Slott, sweet spot.
But I think this is done really well, and it's kind of cool to have this fun lightness to Superman sometimes, and the Golden Superman stuff was cool. So, yeah, great art, great story. I enjoyed this.
Yeah, this really has like Silver Age feels to it. The scenes, there's a lot. There's like Perry White in here and Superman going to a baseball game. Like, he gets to be a hero. He gets to be having fun. But it's in situations that we just don't see as much in modern comics of Superman, like blocking a bunch of deadly baseballs flying at his friend to kill him. And like,
it's old school fun. Yeah.
It's old school fun. And it's nice to have this be a part of the canon right now, even though it isn't playing directly into the main events of DCKO. Sometimes you need a break. Take a breather from the KO.
Yeah, man. Take a break from the fighting.
Have a KO breather. Step out, grab a soda, go to the bathroom, and enjoy a Superman Unlimited. Let's move on and talk about Amazing Spider-Man, Dan Slott's former book, number 20.
Oh, yeah.
From Marvel Comics, written by Joe Kelly, art by John Romita Jr. This book has been alternating back and forth between Peter Parker in space and Norman Osborn back in New York, maintaining the Spider-Man mantle and really going through it. He's developed this mantra, what would Peter do? And we get to see that really played out here as spider slayers have become goblin slayers, and they are there to kill Norman. And he is stuck in the middle. He's really been struggling with being a hero. It's a strange mode for the Spider-Man book to be focusing on Norman wanting to be Peter, and really we are just with his inner monologue throughout this entire side of the book. But I got to say, I like it.
Yeah, Joe Kelly's a hell of a writer. This is a cool cover, by the way. Romita Jr.'s art is fantastic. That's, not saying anything crazy. But, yeah, this is a hell of an issue, especially because Aunt May dies in this issue. So the next one's going to be heartbreaking to see how they're going to deal with that. But this continues to be solid and interesting and a little kind of like off-center Spider-Man, which is fun. So, yeah, I'm... It's definitely got a place in my heart.
Nice. Yeah, same. I'm going to be sad when this particular story ends because I've been really enjoying it. Yes, Pete?
Did you – I just – you know, I kind of was waiting for a little reaction for you when I was like, yeah, Aunt May dies in this issue. And any thoughts on that? Or
She dies so often. She's sort of like the Kenny of Marvel Comics.
Wow. Right? Wow. All you know, right. Well,
has anyone else felt like
it was kind of crazy. In this issue, she kind of like – in the back of a panel, just kind of dies. So I was just like, wow, this is can't wait to see how they deal with this next issue. I'm hoping it's next issue. But, man,
Pete, I think that's a no. I mean, the character that dies based on the to be continued page is Spider-Man. So,
No, but you see her kind of like she's there in the building, and then they come crashing through the building, and then she's kind of like in the back room slowly, like. It's almost like quicksand where she just kind of, we see her disappear.
She's hiding. She's very wiry. She's like very, she can just slide in between stuff like a little,
skinny mini. That all her being there and then them crashing through the building and then, she's going to be fine?
No, I think she's like when Vecna attacks in Stranger Things, she just breaks all of her bones in her hands and arms and just like slides into things.
Oh, okay.
Do you know how, like, a snake can open up its jaw to, like, eat a big animal? Sure, that's sure. Aunt May can do that to escape.
I do that every time I eat a garbage plate.
You eat the entire plate and part of your own
I unhinge my jaw, yeah. Yeah.
That's cool. I believe you. Picks or it didn't happen. We all want to see it. Post it for the people. Let's talk about Touched by a Demon, number one.
Yes.
Dark Horse Comics by art and writing by Kristen Gudsnook. Pete, what did you think about this one?
Man, what a last panel. That twist at the end was very cool. This is scary, but awesome. Love the art. Kind of brings a lightness to the kind of dark material of demons and that kind of stuff. But I love the tone, the vibe of this book. It's like a cool balance of cartoon and dark subject matter. I love this idea, though. I think this is like a well-executed number one. It does such a great job of kind of getting you, like, this is the world, this is where we're going, and, you know, get on board. So I'm on board, man. This is cool.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I love the art. Kristen Gutznuck's art is very good. We've seen it before. We'll see it again, especially in this book. We have a fall from grace into the demon world. And
it's things the play on Touched by an Angel, but it's Touched by a Demon. You know what I mean?
Touched by an Angel, of course, the CBS show. Is that what you're talking about, Pete?
Yeah, or it's just some kind of dark after-school special. You know what I mean? Which Touched I hope it's demon. Not. Yeah, like
Did you watch a lot of after school specials? That's something that I feel like I don't. That's a cliche that happened, but like I don't. It's not like you would turn on the TV and like, here's a special for you to learn a lesson about.
Yeah, yeah.
When did that happen?
I didn't do much watching those as much as like they were on, but I didn't really watch them. Yeah,
my after school special, Darkwing Duck.
Oh, yeah.
I was learning to Let's Get Dangerous. that's the real lesson. But the lesson of this book is be careful what you tell people because they might just do it. Great book. Definitely pick it up. Yes.
It's tough. You know, you give somebody advice and, you know, yeah, that reveal at the end, you're like, oh no. Oh God, no.
What I call a big oops.
Yeah.
What's Not an Oops is our next book, Captain America number 6, yeah. From Marvel Comics, written by Chip Zdarsky, art by Frank Alpizar and Delio Diaz-Cespedes. Captain America, this is kicking off a new arc. We last had this story of Captain America in Latveria. It was a bit, you know, I think we liked it, but it was sort of like, oh, it was sort of complicated. This right. Doom Shadow Part 1, this feels like a number one. I feel like...
Yeah.
You could have easily started the series right here. This does so much laying out of Cap, the situation. There's a scene, sort of the second scene in the book right after the cold open, where Cap like just beats the shit out of a couple of assholes in a bar that I thought was fantastic. This issue was excellent. I really, if you read the first couple and didn't like it, I think some people were talking about that, I would say come back and pick up this issue because this is, I think, where the story really starts.
I agree. Yeah, this really kind of kicks into gear in this one for sure. Great kind of setup here of the bigger thing that's happening of like Red Hulk versus Captain America, which is great. Love the story. Love the art. We got kind of a younger, square jawed looking Cap, but I'm here for it. This is just solid comics, and I cannot wait for the next issue.
It's got a little bit, the art is really good, a little anime style to some panels, but the Red Hulk is legit scary. What I like about the subject matter here is that this is Steve struggling with anti-democratic people in America and then imported overseas. And that's topical in a way that isn't directly commenting on our current politics, but is like, feels like a perfect issue for Captain America to have to react to. Yeah. Someone who literally typifies America. So like that is really cool. Definitely pick this issue up, even if you didn't like some of the previous ones, the previous five in this run. But let's talk about a book that I was excited about this week. That is Assorted Crisis Events number 8 from Image Comics, written by Dennis Camp, art by Eric Zawadzki.
Oh, man.
Now, this comic... We're camping again. We're camping. The camping trip continues. This comic about a series of one-off issues highlighting a character that is going through some sort of displacement. Often it's been time. In this case, it's something a little different, I would say. Where this is a bit of a meta story. A character sort of falls into the gutter, and that's the gutter between comic book panels, which I think is a cool meta comic. We've seen stories that do a little bit of this, but the tragedy of this one really got me. I thought it was – I don't want to say too much about it because I just thought it was a great ride, beautiful art that that takes you on a journey, and we get to the style changes as the story goes on.
Yeah, it takes really big swings.
What do you think, Pete?
Yeah, this is great. I mean, I also love that Assorted Crisis Events kind of stands for ACE. I think that's kind of fun. But yeah, this is just tripped out good time here. I also like the kind of fill in the blank moment. The guy a little meta with the draw me a picture of love. That was kind of cool.
The very end. The
feels. Yeah, the kind of wandering through the comic is cool. It does get meta, but it doesn't get weird. It's fun. The porcelain forest is kind of hilarious.
Yeah, if you've been, like, we love Ice Cream Man, and if you've been feeling a gap there, I think this is a great comic to fill that gap.
And if you also are like, man, I love seeing, my favorite superheroes, but it would be cool to see them all taking a shit. You know, this comic is for you. You know what I mean?
Yes. Number one selling point. It's sort of the dogs playing poker of the comic book fandom.
A lot of people complain, like, I like it, but you never get to see them doing normal stuff, like going to the bathroom or preparing a meal.
Yeah, a lot of people are saying, why doesn't Hulk shit more? A lot of people are saying that. So we're here to demand yes.
Yeah, this you get comic, to see it.
You get to really see it. But, Pete, you want a spinoff that focuses a little more in on it. Give us a top three of who you want featured in your...
I want a pairing, you know what I mean? I want to know, like... Does Hulk have to use Ultra Strong? You know what I mean? Like, someone is, Mr. Fantastic into Angel Soft. Like, who uses what?
You really want to know about their toilet paper?
Yeah, exactly. Who uses?
Why do you have a brand that you buy a particular brand all the time?
Well, I used to go hard for Charmin. That used to be my like jam.
Oh, sorry, I'm writing that down on our T-shirt. I used to go hard for Charmin.
Yeah, they were there for me when I needed them. Okay. So,
but what happened? You had a breakup with Charmin? No, used to go hard for Charmin. Now, there's a story there. That's a one line poem right there. That's like Ernest Hemingway shit. I used to go hard for Charmin.
Funny that you said Ernest Hemingway shit.
Yeah,
we're talking about toilet paper. But yeah, in my house now. The pipes are so old and small that I got to use the kind of like kind that dissipates real quick, you know, the 1,000 sheets, you know, the stuff that
you got tiny pipes
when it hits the water. Yeah, I got tiny pipes, man.
And you're using some wispy single ply?
Yeah, I got to go single ply. It breaks my heart, but...
Holy shit. Breaks your heart, breaks your ass. This is my guy used to go hard for Charmin. I'm going to clip this. We got to post this separately. This is a keeper.
But this comic is great, if I could steer us back a little bit here.
Yeah, really nice. Great point. Yeah, this review is not... We don't want to put this section in with this review because this comic is great. But you know who else used to go hard for Charmin? The Fantastic Four. Especially the characters in issue number 7 from Marvel Comics, written by Ryan North, art by Umberto Ramos. Here we are. Great cover. Really putting this fine Susan Storm stuff on that has been on the last... This issue and the one before. Really cool. This is, part of Invincible Woman is the name of this arc. Really cool. The internal story doesn't quite focus on that in the same way, but I like the idea. Galactus is looking for Sue Storm, and shit's about to go down. The last page reveal we get here of the Invincible Woman herself is really cool. I like where
it's going. That's insane. That teaser image is insane.
Got you, right, Pete?
Oh, man. Yeah, it really did. But this is touching stuff. The things that parents do for their kids, man. You know what I mean? Like, Justin, you don't know about this, but, like, really just some really cool kind of touching moments. I was very moved by this issue. I thought it was very cool. But, man, that teaser image just kind of melted my brain. I really enjoyed this, and I'm a sucker for Ramos's art. It's just so beautiful. There's just the vibe of it just gets me every time. I love it.
Ryan North has been writing Fantastic Four for quite a bit now, and
yeah, for
I really,
a minute.
really enjoy his take. It's a big family involved here, and that helps really flesh out the stories. And we get a great scene with Felicia Hardy, a character I love, who has been put on the shelf a little bit because of the sales of the main comic. I think that's ending very soon. So it was cool to see her here. Good book. Let's talk Titans. Number 13. Yeah. Or sorry, 31 from DC Comics, written by John Layman, art by Pete Woods. Now, the Titans, this is part of DCKO. The Titans are not in the fight for the to become the Omega King, or King Omega, I should say, the KO in KO. Instead, they are here fighting fighting and protecting Earth, which is a losing prospect, as we know from the other issues in the DCKO event. But I like them doing this. I think this particular issue has a lot of emotion, while at the same time being just like a pretty big battle across the whole issue.
Yeah, I loved all the twists and turns in this. Fun last panel. Love the kind of like, oh shit moments here. And I love the Rock Beats Magic line. That was great. You know, you got Terra versus the Parademons here. This is just, I like this. I thought this was a very enjoyable comic.
It's rare in a big crossover to be like, I actually want more of this little side part of it, but I actually do want a little bit more of this part of the story because it's really cool. This still is playing a lot of the Titans storyline stuff when really, like, the heroes defending Earth from just the Omega-ness taking over is such a cool idea and could be its own crossover, essentially. But we're not really getting that story, so it's nice to get a taste here.
Not yet.
Not yet. But right now, let's talk Mortal Thor number 6 from Marvel, written by Al Ewing, art by Pasquale Ferry. Now, this Thor is different. Right, Pete?
Yep, it sure is.
He doesn't get to fly around. He has a hammer on a string. He's a construction worker. Now, but he's still fighting.
I don't appreciate your tone. Just because it's a giant man who is blonde and is unbelievable with a hammer, you know, you're assuming that it's Thor, but it could maybe not be him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And this is working really hard to kind of walk that line for some reason. But I'm still here for it. I know we're making fun of it, and it seems silly, but I'm having a blast with it. This is cool.
I like this, too. I really like Pasquale Ferry's art. The Al Ewing's telling a weird story. There's, like, a lot of, like, myth symbolism. There's a lot of snakes in this, and there's snakes who are being killed in different ways. Yeah. Snake's popular right now. The thing of him having a hammer on a string, though, just makes me laugh a little bit. Isn't that a little weird?
No, I mean, I think it's smart, you know, especially for the different kind of combat work, you know. You know, it kind of gives you a little bit more range, you know. So, you know, the utility of it just makes sense to me.
I feel like, though, we should run an experiment. We should get, especially you, have a big lawn, I'm assuming. Or like the back 40 acres from your cornfield or whatever you do for farming. Are you more of a pig farmer or corn?
Neither, but thank you for assuming both.
Not your country, you always. For those of you not watching the video podcast, Pete has a one of those moonshine containers with three X's on it, and he's got a hayseed in his mouth, and that's just the way he is. He's a real...
Start my jug band.
Yeah, he's in how many jug bands are you in these days?
It's River Bottom Nightmare Band.
but I want you to take a hammer, you must have one, tie a little rope to it, and go out and I want you to swing it around and see how good you are at doing stuff with it.
Well, I mean, you know, like we've seen maces and different kinds of things on strings, so like, you know. Obviously, if you pull it back to you, you don't catch it, you're fucked. But there is, you know, as silly as you think it is, I do think there, you know, it's a smart use of it.
I understand that I could, like, Batman fires a grappling. Everyone fires grappling hooks and climbs shit where it's like, that's so hard to land a grappling hook. So, and, you know, there's a lot of stuff that is not quite believable. But there's something about him swinging that hammer around. I think it's because, like, Thor is very powerful, but the idea that his whole thing is, like, he can really throw a hammer well, I don't think of that as his main power.
Yeah.
But that's what we're really emphasizing.
Well, and, you know, and they dealt with that in the movies, you know what I mean? I think, what was it, the third Thor movie where, you know, he's talking to his father and he's like, what are you, the god of hammers? No, man, yeah. the hammer was never your power, you know, it's just a thing to give you to channel it, so, you know.
It's a great
He's
point.
Trying to, he doesn't know who he is right now, he's trying to figure things out. Hey, I'll give him this hammer on a string time, you know, until he can kind of reveal who
he is. We all have our hammer on a string time, you know?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, Pete, I want you to do that. Send a video, and inevitably, when you knock yourself out after you get hit with the hammer, I'll call an ambulance for you.
Oh, thanks, man.
But truly,
will you pay? Will you pay for the ambulance trip? Or
well, in where you live, a country ambulance is just like an apple cart with a donkey in front of it, right?
Oh man, that's insulting.
Someone making a siren noise with their mouth. Go to Pete's. He hit himself with his string hammer again.
When you do that, all I'm thinking of is when he's like, Arnie Palmer alert. Wee-oo-wee-oo. Arnie Palmer alert.
Good stuff.
Who wants some Arnie Palmies?
Wow. Let's talk Power Fantasy, number 15.
Yes.
Image Comics, written by Kieran Gillen, art by Casper Wingard. Big moves happening in this comic. We're getting also a big reveal in the back matter that this comic, after next issue, is going on a little break, a little hiatus, because this book is a lot of work from the creative team. But Pete, what did you think about this epic confrontation and moment that happens in this?
Yeah, this is a crazy fucking issue. This is awesome. The art, though, I mean, JT says, let's just take a moment and talk about how great the art is. I mean, the use of color, the shading, the big color choices. There's like some panels are just one color and it's just so intense and so clean looking. It's just, oh man, it's really an impressive artistic achievement. It's almost like an anime style. But you know, they have like exclamation marks over like characters' heads, but also like some cool, just like cut out. Like it's like they took an artistic piece, like cut it out and put it on another piece. It's just it's layers, a lot of layers. But yeah, I'm having a blast with this. This was really impressive.
I also, the art, like I've been a big Casper Wingard fan all the way back to Homesick Pilots, a comic book that I love.
Work.
And this, like, these guys, Alex and I interviewed them like over a year ago, but it's still a good interview to listen to. They're very passionate about this book and just love working together on it. And you can really see it, excuse me, in the way that there's just so much life to the panels that I'll give to Casper Wingard. But Kieran Gillen really writing the shit out of this. Characters that are positioned like superpowered, like nuclear-powered nations, in a state of safety, in a safe of careful balance for so much of the beginning of this book. In the last couple issues, things have just started to really fall out of balance, and that means that big things are happening. Characters are dying. I won't say anything else. Great issue. Def pick up. Pete, you've been looking forward to this next comic for quite some time. Planet She-Hulk, number 3 from Marvel Comics, written by Stephanie Phillips, art by Aaron Cooter. Give it up, Pete.
Oh, my God. You want to talk about a last panel reveal? This shit is insane. Oh, my God. This continues to be so great. I love this comic. The art is absolutely amazing. This is just an absolute blast. Such a well-executed idea. Such a cool kind of thing to see She-Hulk go through this kind of like covering for Hulk and how she deals with it. I love this. This is just awesome, awesome comics.
Let me say, it's unfair to compare two things you like, really, but I'm enjoying this more than Planet Hulk.
Wow, watch your goddamn mouth, man.
I love that She-Hulk is just, she just works in such counterposition to what is happening and the vibe of Sikaar. Yes. Like, it's really good. The last page reveal, I won't say it, same as you did, Pete, but it is excellent, really speaking to what's come before when it comes to She-Hulk. The art's great. It feels epic and also retro, sort of a gladiatorial, while also feeling very modern. And I just really ride with Jen throughout this whole story. So, yeah. Def, check.
What's also cool about the reveal is it's like been, you have to be, have been reading She-Hulk for a while to get that reveal. Well, not for a while, but like following what's been going down, because otherwise you're like, why is this a big deal? But yeah, I cannot wait to see how they're going to deal with it, because it is a big deal and I'm very excited for what's happening next.
It is a big deal. What else is a big deal is Star Trek, The Last Starship, number 4 from IDW, written by Jackson Kelly and Colin Lansing, art by Adrian Bonilla. We talked to Kelly and Lansing on the show about this book a couple months back at this point, but this book really able to take the Star Trek universe in a yet another different path, set in a future that's been talked about in the TV universe after the burn. This issue takes another big step forward, I would say, into a lot of stuff that's happening. We're focusing on one particular character here. Pete, how'd you feel about it?
Yeah, this is just, well, first off, cool cover. I love the art on this book. It's really impressive. This has been like, you know, I'm not a huge Trekkie, but the writing on this has just been so good. It pulls you in and takes such good care of you. Yeah, just really impressed with like the shading and the look and the feel that this comic has. It's just really epic and really feels like such a great space adventure just by the look of it. But yeah, I don't know what that black arm beam means at the end of this comic, but I'm like, oh shit.
That seems like an important bit of...
seems like a big deal. So
important accessory for any outfit. I agree with you about the art. It's really nice, particularly in this issue, which is sort of telling a larger backstory. The great thing about this book is its ability to go really big with some issues we've seen previous to this one, but also then zero in really finely on a particular moment. So definitely worth a pickup.
If it's anything like when they put on a black armband in baseball, somebody's died. You know what I mean?
Wow, Pete, really bringing up some, I don't know, baseball deaths?
Random things that maybe probably don't tie in?
I mean, wearing a black armband all the time. That was a whole when Superman died in the 90s.
Went through a big phase of wearing black armbands when Superman died.
I had was black just all up and down my sleeves, neck. Yeah. It's like a turtleneck armband.
Really, you went through a real emo phase once Superman died. That was it was tough for you.
100%. I love that guy. You know, Superman.
Yeah.
He's back.
That's an important thing. You know?
Just like my childhood pet, he's back. But died. Came back, Pet Cemetery. Let's talk Wicked, Witch's Road. This is issue number 2. It's from Marvel, written by Wyatt Kennedy, art by Andy Pereira. We're following Wiccan as he is back to Earth with Hulkling by his side in a different way, as we find out in this issue. I want to commend this issue for getting us really, like, getting us hard into the story. I thought this was, and taking characters that don't often have this tone and putting it into a very fairy tale, almost like books of magic, that type of storytelling where everything becomes a bit symbolic. Characters are put in different places very quickly. I'm thinking of Fables as well. This issue reminded me of Pete. What did you think of it?
This is fun. I love the Nameless the Fox. The fact that Fing Fang Foom shows up got me really gassed up. Yeah, this is a blast. Love the art. Love these kind of characters. And it's a cool cover here. You got the classic kind of puppet master set up here, you know.
Yeah, almost as Hulkling becomes a puppet, we've got Baba Yaga. A crazy thing that is a real, like, story. It's like a Russian folklore about a witch that lives in a house with chicken legs. And it's so comic book ready. I think that's why we've seen it in a lot of different comics. But wild stuff. I think it's nice that Marvel can have this little corner of the universe. It's a little bit weirder, than we're used to.
Fun with the magic and the weirdness. You know what I mean? Come on.
Yeah, I love being weird. I used to go hard for Charmin. Wonder Woman number 29 from DC Comics, written by Stephanie Williams, art by Jeff Spokes, kicking off a brand new story from this series that we read the shit out of. Pete, what'd you think?
It's great. I mean, cool cover. Interesting. You know, we've got this kind of like baby situation, you know. I'm interested to kind of get to the bottom of this, like, is this baby cursed or not type of thing. But, you know, it was cool to see kind of like Wonder Woman go back to her island and her friends and be like, yo, I'm a little overwhelmed. I got a baby. And they're like, hey, listen, it's cool. You know what I mean? Like, we can kind of like help you and look after you. And I was like, oh, that's nice. You know, it's nice to have people in your life like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, big pivot from what's come before here with Stephanie Williams on it. I like the art. It's very cool. It feels different. There's a lot of sparring. How would you feel, Pete, if you were sparring as much as these as they're doing on Themyscira?
Well, you ever sparred a lot about in your life? Yeah. You know, you go through different things.
What were you sparring?
I got into sparring when I was working at a Tough Crowd with Colin Quinn. Because, fun fact, Colin Quinn was really into boxing, and he would have a trainer come, and you could sign up for time on your lunch break and get free boxing lessons, which was cool.
So you fought Colin Quinn?
No, Colin Quinn had a heavy bag in his office, and if you were having a tough day, you could go in there and just kind of vent on the bag.
Eventually, Colin was like, "Pete, you have to go back to your desk. You can't be in here."
I was like, fuck you, you know.
I hate my boss. It's you.
But yeah, like he worked with boxers as part of his kind of like physical daily kind of like, you know, how you go running. He worked, you know, he would do some boxing. So like it was nice enough that he would share with us and we could sign up during our lunchtime to work with the, I don't like the inner fighting, you know, when, you know, people who are supposed to be on the same team are fighting in this comic. It's tough because I don't like when my parents fight, but, you know.
Yeah, but they're all working together. I mean, the name of this arc is The Village. So I think it's like it takes a village to raise a child, I think is what they're getting
sure
at
does.
The title. When I was in elementary school, my best friend, we were just friends, cool. We would like read comics and stuff. And then he got into karate and then all he wanted to do was spar. And I don't like to get kicked. So then we stopped being friends.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you can spar with your friends, but it would always be once someone hits somebody too hard, and then it's just fucking on, and now you're fighting your friend, and that never ends well. So, yeah,
That is what happens in the comics.
Way too many friendships that way. Yeah.
From just a fight. Wow. We've never physically fought. You definitely punched me. You're a puncher.
Yeah, I like to punch.
Yeah. Really great. Let's talk X-Men number 24, part of Shadows of Tomorrow from Marvel Comics, written by Jed McKay, art by Tony Daniel. This focusing on some villains, the villains of 3K. We get Cassandra Nova, we get the 3K characters, we get a little bit of Joseph he's gone full Magneto in this comic, and Dark Beast himself comes to hang, and this definitely, it says on the top of the cover page, this is Age of Revelation epilogue, and this really does feel like the epilogue where we're getting the villains from previous continuity, and Dark Beast, who, spoiler here, was secretly in the future along with Cyclops, learning all the bad shit and bringing it back so that 3K can now create the X virus that did so much damage during Age of Revelation. P, how'd you feel about this?
I thought the art was great. I don't like this, all this focus on the villains and the, you know, yeah. It's a Dark Beast. All this just makes me
angry.
Don't
like Dark Beast.
I don't. You know, this whole like, oh, I've got to go to the future and all this bullshit. And, you know, it just it loses me.
What do you think about, so Joseph, the clone of Magneto, is in this comic and he's like, call me Magneto. I find it interesting, and part of the plot here is that they have to get his helmet, his psychic energy blocking helmet that regular Magneto has. How do they each have this helmet? Where do you get to, they pass? Because everyone treats the psychic energy blocking helmet as, oh, I can't get through that. It's impossible.
Yeah.
And there was only one of them. Magneto had it. And now there's only two. They didn't clone the helmet.
Well, you might. If you clone somebody with a helmet on, you know, don't you clone the helmet? You know what I mean?
That's definitely not how cloning works. No, it's not like making a copy on a copy machine.
Well, I wouldn't know, but I hear you.
You don't know about copy machines? You would love them. It takes a picture and it makes.
Oh, I know way too much about copy machines, my friend.
Oh yeah,
as someone who was a PA for many years, I know.
A real copy jockey over here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. I had to get in there, man. When those jams happened, you got to, like, crawl in and find...
You're solving paper jams?
Oh, yeah, dude. Come on, man.
Wow. That's nice.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm a line producer, so I'm way up.
Yeah, yeah. You don't know about that, like, IT support. No. That
I tell someone to tell someone. I tell someone to tell someone to tell
you. I'm in the back of house, bro. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Really good.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, this... I just... You know, like this sister of Professor X that looks exactly like Professor X, but good not villain. Really.
I think it's a good villain.
Okay, there's one vote for that. And then the guy who looks exactly like Magneto, but is Magneto, but then wants you to call him Magneto. I'm like, dude, what
are you doing? I agree, that's weird.
This is a collection of assholes. So who am I rooting for? You know what I mean?
These are the villains. The thing is, I'm sort of interested in what's going to come of the Dark Beast stuff and the creation of the X-Virus. We've had a lot of continuity in the X-Men world of them trying to make a virus and people having to stop it. So I don't know if we want to relive that again, but I do like that as a follow-off, a shadow of tomorrow from Age of Revelation. 3K, I still can't quite get on board with what's happening with 3K, so that's a little bit of a tough hang. But I would like to get back to the main X-Men and just really settle in with what they're up to. But let's talk American... Cool. American Caper number 3 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Dan Houser and Laszlo, art by David Lapham. This is a wild comic. There's a lot of crimes going on and a lot of people investigating them or committing them. And I think it's all going to come together into some sort of big American caper. But Pete, what do you think about the individual pieces here?
Yeah, we got a lot of characters and, you know, great art, grimy and kind of dirty, like, you know, this comic. And I feel like they're doing such a good job of kind of harnessing that. But a great combo of writing and art here. Interesting story. I'm interested in seeing how this turns out. There's some interesting language in here, which... gets under my skin.
Ooh,
no, I hate the term that they use in here. That
you're talking about the character, the wife who's obsessed with internet culture.
Yes,
yes, I mean, it's not championing that kind of rhetoric. I don't think it is. It is sort of satirizing. I think one of the character that this issue focuses on is. Playing in a local cowboy indie film, it seems like, and he goes home to his wife and kid. The wife is a very aggressive online conservative who has a lot of believes in a lot of conspiracy theories and chases a lot of bad ideas and has come to hate most people, while the son is obsessed with video games and wants to be a hero in a very abstract killing alien sort of way. So it's very much commenting on modern America, but I do like the individual character study we get here, and I am curious how everyone is very intense in this book, so I want to see how these little threads start to come together. I did enjoy it. Let's talk Hulk Smash Everything when he's not on the toilet, number 2 from Marvel Comics, written by Ryan North, art by Vincenzo Caruto, or Caratu, I should say. Pete, This is everything you could.
Yeah, I mean, this is just fun. This is just fun. Hulk back in time, kind of just smashing, and then the leader shows up, and he's like, "Yo, I'll fight whoever, man. I'll fight dinosaurs. I don't give a fuck." But yeah, this is just a great concept, well executed. Love the art style. It's just a blast. It's just fun.
Very fun. Emphasis on the art here. This is a big sort of like, let's let the Hulk be in the middle of some wild things. He's fighting the asteroid that killed the dinosaurs, essentially, here. I love the use of the leader. What a fun
versus idea.
You know? This is, Ryan North is having fun in this comic, and it just feels very loose and free. I definitely enjoyed the read on this one. Let's talk Redcoat number 16 from Ghost Machine and Image Comics. This is a comic I really enjoy. It's written by Jeff Johns, art by Brian Hitch. This is, Redcoat has been, I talked about this in the live show, but it's a comic that has a similar story structure to a comic I love, Starman, where our main character is doing his thing. Sometimes it's a standalone story where it's just a lighthearted, ne'er-do-well mission. Sometimes it's something with a little more weight. The main story from the beginning of the run of the series was Redcoat versus Benedict Arnold. We're picking up where that left off here in this issue, kicking off a larger sort of main story arc, and I really liked it. It's brought together some of the pieces we haven't really seen in a while, and I just like that there's a confrontation this issue that I thought was really well written, and I like the different character motivations. One of my faves in the stack right now, Pete.
Yeah, this is an impressive run, this Redcoat run that has been going on. Every time I see this comic, I'm like, and it wins me over every time. The writing is that good. The ideas are that sharp. It's just really great art, really cool writing. This is just, it keeps winning you over. And every time, like you were saying, they got new ideas. They're pushing this character in different ways. And it continues to impress. And the art is just as good as the writing. And the writing is really impressive.
Great book. Let's talk X-Men of Apocalypse number 2. This is from Marvel Comics, written by Jeff Loeb, art by Simone DiMeo. We're following a team of mutants from the Age of Apocalypse as they travel to different important moments in the X-Men history. This moment is when Jean Grey showed up on the steps of X-Mansion on Gray Malkin Lane. And they just sort of fight for some reason. What do you think about this, Pete?
Well, this is just great because it brings me back to the Age of Apocalypse and the art style.
An age you loved.
Yeah, I just seeing the art style, seeing the kind of graphic of Age of Apocalypse, it's got a warm place in my heart. So I'm like, oh, fun. This is a cool idea. Fun, well executed here. Great seeing Phoenix Force. It brings me back, and they do such a good job of kind of like revisiting that idea and then kind of heightening it. So I feel like this is a great package, tight package, if you will.
Tight package, he says. The art is excellent in this, and you know, there's some good scenes. It's a little bit hard to tell. The logic of the main story doesn't quite make sense. It is funny, we pick up when Jean Grey arrives at the X-Mansion, and a few pages later, she's like trying on her X-Men uniform. I was like, how does that work? Do they already have that there for her? That doesn't make sense. So I don't know exactly if it's a story that doesn't have holes in it, but I do really like the character Nate Grey, X-Man. So great to see him here. We jump to
classic Field of Dreams logic. If you make it, they'll come. If you make a Storm uniform, Storm will show up. You know what I mean?
Is that how it goes? It's very fashion forward heroism.
That's right.
Dress for the job you want. It's like make the clothes for the person you want to show up. Mm-hmm. That's great.
Exactly.
Well, I've had a Santa Claus outfit in my bedroom for 35 years. That fucker hasn't shown up yet.
Well, I think this year's going to be your year, buddy.
Okay. Well,
keep it fresh.
I do keep it very fresh. But I will say, just highlighting one more time, the Simone DiMeo art is very good, even if the story doesn't quite make complete sense.
Yeah, I'm blinded by the art on this, so yeah.
Yes, that makes Pete sense. Has gone blind. Let's talk Powers 25, number 5 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Brian Michael Bendis, art by Michael Avon Oeming.
Hey!
We had Mr. Brian Michael Bendis on our live show last week, and we talked a bit about Powers.
We didn't talk about this very much, but yeah.
We did. Well, we did. We talked about his work in Avengers 800, but we definitely talked about this for a little bit, and what a departure it was from the original Power story, and how many big creative swings they take on this. And this issue, I feel like, really is a great example of that. There's so much happening. There's great dialogue. It's what you expect from a Bendis Oeming book. Art that is like just of that, of his style, very action oriented, great character feelings that really, the look of the characters, that you can see the way they're feeling, which is helps to back up Bendis's great dialogue, as his hard boiled cop dialogue. I think I've been enjoying this. It's dense. There's a lot going on, but it's pleasant.
Yeah, I'm just so happy this is back, just to kind of be reading this book again and seeing the art. It just all brings back such great kind of memories and emotions from an amazing series. But also, they make a cameo in the beginning, which is cool. You know, give a shout out. It's the anniversary. Why not celebrate it? So it was cool to see that. Also, just such a cool, fun interrogation scene, you know?
Yeah.
We've seen a really lot of well those done. In movies and, you know, all sorts of stuff. And so that was just so well done. And the art's just so amazing. This is just great comics and really fun and worth it.
Bendis, not missing a beat, still in top form. But let's talk The Darkness, number 2, from Top Cow Image Comics, written by Mark Silvestri, art by Raymond Gay. So this comic, I talked earlier about comics that feel of the 90s. This feels like you pulled it out of a dollar bin, blew some dust off it, and it feels like this is literally of the 90s. It's a shame Alex isn't here because he loves this shit.
Oh, yeah, it is. It is a shame. But, yeah, this is fun. The classic angels versus demons. We're kind of getting the setup in this issue. Great art. I mean, the yellow in the angels in this is so impressive and so kind of like almost glowing in an angelic way. It's quite a feat. I can't imagine the how they kind of made that happen and how much it cost to print. But man, if you like The Darkness, you're going to love it. I don't know why I like The Darkness, but I do. And so I'm enjoying the heck out of this.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing. Is like, I think if you like this, like Pete and Alex, you're really on board. I think it's fine. I just don't. It's a little stilted and weird, I think, throughout. It feels very old-fashioned, the storytelling.
Yeah, very 90s.
But the visuals are cool, and like you said, the colors are really there's a certain quality to it. I feel like the colors that take you back, but it's got that very 90s comic book color layering and stuff to it.
Yeah.
So shouts to you guys. And let's close up our stack with Miss Truesdale and the Rise of Man, number 2 from Dark Horse, written by Mike Mignola, art by Jesse Lonergan. Jesse Lonergan art's sick. I feel like Mike Mignola was like, I want to work with them and let's do this. And that's what we get. Is a good story in this. The art is so sick in this. Like the way we have our main character, Miss Truesdale, and the sort of the god position that she's put in, and the sort of curse of man on the earth. There's a lot of mythological history of the different ages of creatures here. But there's maybe a third of the comic is these layered panels where it's Miss Truesdale and Hellboy divided up between different lines on the page. And it's so cool. It's such a, like, I felt like I was being pulled into the page on everyone because I was sort of focusing in on it so well. Really enjoyed this.
It's such a cool way of storytelling. It's just hard because, like, I'm like, oh, man, this is a team that does Hellboy. why aren't we getting Hellboy? And they're even showing us, like, oh, man, Hellboy's done
little adventures taste. Just like this. Taste of Hellboy.
Yeah, you're like, stop teasing me. Because this character is great and does deserve their own story. But it's like, it's hard because it's like, oh, man, that'd be cool.
It's all Hellboy, one story, Hellboy, Pete. Dude. I think that's the point.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah, it is a Hellboy story. So, yeah, this is awesome. I just miss Hellboy, but all that aside, this is a fantastic, artistic, amazing comic, and yeah, man, if you like monsters and the Hellboy world, you will love this comic.
If you like monsters, if you are monsters, you're going to love it. And that's it for the stack, everybody.
Yeah, stacking it up.
We have officially stacked it up. You can. We'll be back here next week with a whole new batch of comics. You can check us out on our live show every Tuesday night at 7. You can check out Comic Book Club News every day, dropping a bunch of news about comics. We have a bunch of podcasts coming up. We're about to cover Wonder Man as that's coming out. You can check out our Patreon and our Patreon Slack, where we spend all day talking about this stuff. Subscribe to our other stuff. Send us an email at comicbookclublive at gmail.com. Check out comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and so much more. And until next time, we will see you at the comic book shop, especially if you, like Pete, used to go hard for Charmin.
I knew that was coming back.
You knew it was coming. Comic book lover, comic book lover. They sit on crappy couches and they let the secrets leak. And occasionally they let their special guest speak. So grab your grin.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.